Welcome to Half Stack Data Science, the show about data science in the real world. Bit of housekeeping to start us off today. If you're an analyst at the start of their data career, you need to practice your new skills on real-world problems. And I happen to be writing a book exactly for that purpose. My book Solve Any Data Analysis Problem is out in Manning's Early Access Program. You can already buy it and receive chapters as I write them. As of today, Chapter 5 has just been released, so you can already read half of the book. Links and discount codes will be in the show notes. Right, on to today's episode. In today's episode, we talked to Kat Greenbrook, the author of another great book, The Data Storyteller's Handbook, How to Create Business Impact Using Data Storytelling. Kat is a data storyteller from Aotearoa, New Zealand. She is a consultant, workshop facilitator, industry speaker, and founder of the data storytelling company Rogue Penguin. With a unique blend of science, business, and design, she empowers data professionals to communicate data effectively through storytelling. We talked about why Kat focuses on data storytelling, what that means exactly, why analysts need to be good storytellers, and as usual, we touched on the future and how AI will impact it. So please enjoy our conversation with Kat Greenbrook. All right, we're here with Kat Greenbrook. Kat, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. So we'll start with the same question we always start with, which is, what is your job title and what do you really do all day?
Yes, so my job title is a data storyteller, and it sounds very, very buzzwordy, but that is what I call myself. What do I do all day? So this depends on the day, the year. This year has been very, very much focused on writing a book, and so I've written a book about data storytelling. When I'm not writing that book, I've been running workshops. So I teach, my clients are generally companies that have really large data and analytics teams, and I teach them how to do data storytelling, how the end-to-end process works, how they can incorporate it into the work that they do. And so that's been my year, really. At the beginning of the year, I made a very active decision to say no to any new project work that came my way, just because I knew I would never get this book finished if I was doing work for other people. So I had to really carve out time to devote to writing. And so that's been the focus for this year, is book writing and workshops.
Yeah, you said it was a buzzword, but you're creating the buzz. You wrote the book. One of the books.
So what led me to storytelling? It was more frustration, I think. My background is analytics, and so I've done lots of different kinds of analytics roles, leading more into your predictive modeling data science work. And I just grew really, really frustrated by just the industry and the space that I was in. I was building these models and they weren't being used. The businesses weren't ready to operationalize analytics in the way that they needed to in order to get the full impact of these analytical models. And it was just frustrating to a data analyst. I mean, that's your job, and you just feel like it has no purpose, or you're not creating the impact that you really want to. And I did feel that visualization was a way in which I could help engage people with analytics. And so that was my doorway into data storytelling. And a lot of people go through that visualization door. I thought if I could make my data and insights pretty enough, they would engage people. And so therefore people would create more action from it. And that worked for a little bit, but at the end of the day, there was still that story. And it is a buzzword because it's used across so many different industries and it means different things across different industries. But essentially, it's how do we wrap around context and meaning into our data insights and the way that we communicate them so that some sort of action can create that business impact. And that's what data storytelling is all about. It's how do we effectively communicate the insights that we find in data analysis. And so what led me to this whole storytelling career is that it was just driven by absolute frustration.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. So you said your clients are primarily people with data analyst teams who are clearly missing this piece as well. So what is it you think that, what is the reason that this is missing from so many analysts'
especially
toolbox?
Large teams, yeah.
Yeah, especially large teams. Surely someone over there can tell a story.
Yeah, I think it stems from a few things. A lot of it is we don't hire for that. And we hire for we hire for technical abilities, which is absolutely necessary in those kind of roles. But we don't necessarily think about how are we going to communicate what we found from those technical activities. And it's a shame because all of that effort that we put into creating and finding these data insights, all the modeling that we do, it's all wasted if we can't communicate that effectively to people outside of those data teams. And so part of it is, yeah, we're just not hiring for those abilities. We're not teaching those abilities necessarily in the educational pathways that lead people into analytics. They are still very, very technically focused. And so I don't think it's been given the attention that it deserves necessarily from the people who are wanting to get into the field. I do find I teach a lot of different kinds of people at different stages of their career, and the people I find the hardest to teach the importance of data storytelling are actually the students. They're the people who are still currently studying and have never actually entered into a business world yet, because they just don't understand the problem. They don't understand why they should have to learn how to communicate, because they don't think it's necessarily their role. And so those are definitely the hardest people to get on board with data storytelling.
I was on the edge of my seat of the many other people you could have named, many other groups you could have named. Who's the easiest to turn to the cause of data storytelling?
Managers. Yeah.
Customers.
Yeah. the people who are leading these very, very technical teams, they may not be technical themselves, but they do understand the importance of having that insight. But they are the people who are probably more responsible for showing what kind of impact that team is creating. And they do realize that if that team is not capable of spreading what they find wider than their immediate team, that they're in trouble.
Interesting. We've had a lot of other educators on this season of Half Stack Data Science, and some of them teach people how to go through, I guess, other doors with the same frustration. So one of the reasons your models might not make impact could be that they never made it to near any kind of production by any kind of definition. And I like the idea that there could be an even more fundamental problem of, well, your model could be in production. It could be have a beautiful API, and still, if no one is calling that API, be it a dashboard, a presentation, or an actual API, what was it all for? What is the reaction when you've been teaching people, or what do you think will be the reaction of the readers of your book that you've just released, when they realize how much effort they may have wasted? Because that's the moment that led you to change career, right? And David and I have both had that moment. Have you seen that happen on someone's face, and like in the middle of the course, or do you think they'll have it in the middle of the book?
I hope so. I do hope it's that quick a realization in some cases, but I do think it is something that happens over time and over experience. Sometimes I think maybe my realization is just because the older you get, the more you want to have some sort of impact with your life. And so part of it could just be that, you know, a little bit of experience, a little bit of reevaluating what you're here to do, and that plays a big part in it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was lucky enough to read, you know, an early draft of the book, and I can imagine a 10 or 20 year version of myself reading the book and going, well, yeah, obviously you want people to do this stuff and you need all this stuff and blah, 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 and sort of dismissing it. So it's really interesting that this most fundamental and like important thing of like, can you tell a story around your data, whatever that data may be, however it was produced, may need to be taught towards the end of the chain of skills. Because David and I have been talking for a number of years now about how to improve that education piece. We've never, David, fully hit on storytelling, though, as a skill up front.
Yeah, but I really like it as a separate thing from visualization. And it just really struck me, Kat, when you said that people don't hire for that skill, which is fascinating, because then what do we hire for? Like, what is the point of technical skills if they don't go anywhere? And so what elevates something from a nice slide deck that doesn't do anything to something that is data storytelling? So what is the missing component, without revealing too much of your book, because people should read it? But
a lot of the time, you're right there, slide decks can be beautiful and they can be engaging to look at, but then you're kind of left with, okay, well, so what? What should I do now? Why should I care? And so part of the whole data storytelling process is to actually understand, first of all, why you're communicating in the first place. And when you think of all the different ways that we communicate within a business, an email, for example, you wouldn't send an email if you weren't sure on your message, right? And data storytelling is exactly the same. The way that which we generally communicate our data insights is to just stick them all up, whether it's a dashboard or a one pager, but just a whole lot of metrics on some sort of page, and then hope that that's our job done and the audience understands what they need to. Whereas we need to be far more active in that process now. There's too many metrics out there to expect our audience to have to go through them all and understand what they mean. And so first of all, understand why you're communicating, and then understand who you're communicating to. So, I mean, we've all heard this probably said lots and lots and lots of times in terms of understand your audience, but it is key to creating something that's going to resonate with that group of people. You do need to understand a little bit more about what motivates them, or what are they working on, what are their business goals, how can you try to work with them in order for them to be able to achieve it. And then I think the biggest thing that's generally missing from those kind of visualizations or beautiful slide decks is the message. The actual, what do I want to say to this audience group that I've chosen? And a lot of the time that message is just, it's just not there. And some of it stems from people feeling really uncomfortable to actually put a message out there. And I can completely understand that, because when I went, my background is science, I've got a degree in science, and we were taught to present our information in a very, very unbiased way. So essentially just put your information out there, and then you can't be accused of putting any kind of spin on it. And I think that view on things needs to change. I mean, it's not about manipulating your audience or putting a spin on it. It's about how do you present it in a way that they are going to be able to clearly understand what it means. And yes, there will be situations where people will use it to manipulate certain audiences. And I mean, that's not good.
They're going to do it anyway, right? Like that's...
Exactly.
Yeah, with or without. I really enjoyed that part of the book a lot. So the tips you give for like giving some agency and therefore some responsibility to the communicator of this data story. I wonder if when you have been teaching the course that sort of spawned the book, or even in the process of writing, did some of those demons from science come back? Like has some feedback come back from the reviews, and in the workshops you've taught, do people rise up against this idea that the person communicating the data should even know what the story could be?
Yeah, it always comes back. There's always somebody that will raise that in terms of, that's not my job. I don't have that, you know, that's not my responsibility to do, in terms of I shouldn't do this, it makes me feel uncomfortable. And I think, yeah, it does stem from what we were taught to do. But I do think that whole idea of what used to be a data analyst role was just about making those numbers, making those insights accessible, and that was it. And so you just kind of find them in the data that you've got. You present them in a way that whoever's looking at them can easily find the numbers that they want. And that job is still relevant today. So that's what I see as creating a dashboard. You're essentially making those insights available so they're easy to access for somebody who understands the context and meaning of that data. But then I think what's evolved is this whole idea of data storytelling and using storytelling as a way to communicate those insights, because you do need to take on more of a data advisor role because you are there to help explain what matters. And I think it's people do get caught up in the fact that they feel like they're putting a bias on it. They feel like they're manipulating because we're talking about what do I want to achieve from my communication, and that can be taken multiple ways. But at the end of the day, I think if we're going to get any sort of real true value from our data, because we do have so much of it these days within businesses, we need that advisor to step in and translate.
I think the additional responsibility is a great point. I mean, I think historically, right, technical teams thought that their job was just to churn out technical material and that was it. But that's not sustainable if they don't produce tangible value, right? If there's nothing linked to how the business operates, then it's not going to produce anything. So I think that's a great point, that it should be the analysts that take a bit of that responsibility. But it's hard because you kind of want to sit on the fence with a lot of findings, don't you? Because of this problem that what if someone does something based on something that isn't actually supported by the data and I didn't actually mean to drive them in that direction. But if we're just sat on the fence all the time and not communicating anything, then we're not going to drive any change. Nothing's going to happen, right?
Yeah. And I think some of it is to do with not truly understanding the business well enough. And so and that's why I think it's very, very hard for people who are new to the field, who are coming in new, a bit green to a business. And so they don't necessarily have that business acumen. They don't necessarily want to be making those big calls. They do just want to present it and leave it to people who know, well, they think no more than they do. And in some cases, that's true. And that's what a dashboard's for. But I think if you can learn as much as you can about the business that you're working in or the area that you're working in, you will feel a lot more comfortable being able to communicate the message of your data.
Can I try and get you to put a statistic out in the world? Of all of the effort spent across decades of BI, self-service analytics, citizen data science, whatever you want to call, give people some data and some kind of tool-y thing and then they will find happiness in the numbers that they find. What percentage are you saying of that work by millions of people, including everyone on this podcast, was kind of wasted? Like, is it half? Could half of it have been wasted, or is it actually a lot higher?
I think it's more than that.
Yeah, okay. Oh, no.
I was ready for whatever number.
No, I'm not going to put a number on it, but I do think it's more than that.
More than half.
Yeah. When you think about what's truly going to drive a business to change or make a decision in any way, and I'm speaking from my own experience. When I think about when I was working as an analyst and the amount of monthly reporting that I would do, and it was just, you know, cut and paste, refresh, this line goes up here, this line goes down there. It's all just like, what is the point? And I'm very sorry if anybody is doing that in their role right now. And if you are, I do think you really need to think about how what you are doing is driving any kind of business impact, because that's what at the end of the day we are all employed to do. We all have a responsibility to the business that we're working for to try and improve it, to try and create some sort of change, create some sort of innovation, whatever the business is there to do. But sometimes, especially as technical people, we are so removed from those really, really high level outcomes. And especially, I do a lot of work for government agencies as well, and the technical people are very, very, very far away from the front line. And so it can be quite hard to feel like you're actually driving any of that change. But that's why we're employed, right? We're not employed to create models because we enjoy creating models. That's not our job. We're there to change the company that we work for, and I don't think enough of the work that's done is actually succeeding in doing that.
Yeah, I think it comes back to education, where I think students really don't understand the point you've just made, which is just so obvious to us, I think, on this call. Like, what your job is not to churn out models. But I think there's still this expectation from students that, well, that's what I'm going to be, this very super technical person working on super technical problems, and the rest is everybody else's problem. I mean, what struck me there is, I mean, do you think you have to go through it and get burned before you really take that message on board? Or is it possible to preempt it in people, to say, like, upfront, convince them that this is, you know, how things are?
Yeah, I think sometimes for some people you do need to go through and get burned. I think for some people, even though they get burned, they still won't necessarily change. And I think there are other people who will naturally gravitate towards this field, this data storytelling field. And so I do think that anybody can be taught to tell a data story. But I also think there are some people who will just naturally want to do so more. And so they'll be the ones who are striving to be better. But yeah, there's different kinds of people, and some people...
Continuing on that positive note that we just got onto briefly, let's try and stay positive. So who are those people who embrace it? And is this a way to make this whole field, industry, practice, whatever you want to call it, a bit more inclusive and useful at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't just do workshops for technical people. And so some of the people that I've had through the workshops, the role that I find is the most almost natural at picking up what I teach are the people in these kind of business analytics roles. And so these BAs. And so they're halfway between business operations and then your more technical data science workers. And they just have this natural way of being able to understand the technical and then communicate to the general. And they're just, I think, just because of the nature of their roles, they're really, really good at data storytelling. And I just want to say as well that you don't have to be visually inclined, and so you don't have to be that creative visual person to be a good data storyteller. Data storytelling is not about how pretty you can make a data visualization. You can tell a data story without using any visuals whatsoever. So it is just an act in clear communication.
It's probably been my hang up in the past, honestly. You know, not a natural aptitude for that side of things, and then always feeling that, yeah, but because of that, that's the reason things weren't cutting through. But we've already talked about probably the more fundamental reasons why that wasn't happening.
Is there a technical component to data storytelling training? Just because what I was thinking, we were talking about science earlier, and p-hacking and so on is a thing that comes up, like, and we can do similar things with data. Is there a technical component as well to help people ground them in, you know, what you can and can't say when it's supported by evidence, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it depends on what you see as technical. So what you actually class as a technical skill. There is definitely a process in terms of data storytelling. So part of my data storytelling process involves an editing process of all the data insights that you find. And so it is a case of data analysis is its own process. Data analysis produces data insights as the output. Those data insights need to be curated in some way in order for them to be able to tell an effective data story. And part of a big mistake that people can make in terms of data storytelling is trying to tell too many stories at once. And so there is a bit of an editing process in terms of you need to figure out which data insights belong in which story and curate that information. And then there is a definite structure in terms of how you I call them building blocks. And so how you arrange those building blocks into this narrative structure to be able to effectively communicate that story. So yes, it is described as kind of a soft skill, but there's definitely a process that you can go through that makes it very step by step and easy to learn. It's not like it's this fuzzy thing that people can't really reach out and touch. And, you know, storytelling is sometimes seen as it's a very, very creative, very fictional, very kind of, yeah, just a fuzzy field. Whereas I think there are definitely ways in which you can put some hard process around the activity.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking more around like just the numeracy side of things, especially if you're bringing BAs up to that level of being able to tell data stories. Is there a level, or is there like a gap in just basic numeracy about, you know, how percentages work and how you shouldn't take averages of averages in situ, you know, that kind of stuff, that just to really get beyond the basic mistakes that people can make?
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of that, and that's why whoever's doing the data storytelling, and it could be the more technical data scientist, or it could be a BA, or it could be anyone in another role, it could be a communications person. There is a level of, I don't want to say data literacy, but there is a level of understanding that you should be aware of, and you should understand the limitations of how those insights were created. You don't necessarily have to understand the ins and outs of building that model, but you should still understand the implications of some of the decisions that have been made as part of that model build. So there's definitely that awareness that needs to happen, but you don't necessarily have to be the technical person to have done it.
No, that's fair. I mean, I've always had this sense, and I don't know if you agree, that it's probably easier to make someone who's already business oriented, as you said, someone already closer to the data storyteller, like make them more like an analyst and upskill them technically, like with technical, like actual technical skills, than it is to take someone deeply rooted in the technical side of things and make them more of a business person. I don't know if that's been your experience.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think it comes down to the individual personality, and some people are naturally inclined to want to, and this is myself in this group of people, who I want to make sense of the world, and so I like to take something that's really complex and make it easy to understand. And so I think that's why I gravitate to doing this particular role, and there are other people who want to dive deeper into actually really understanding what makes whatever they're looking at tick. And so that idea of questioning and questioning and questioning and questioning, I mean, they fit into both data storytelling and analytics, but the data storytelling side of things is really directed at somebody else trying to communicate it to somebody else, whereas the analyst, I think, is a little bit more internal, wanting to discover. And so it does come down to different personalities, I think, will gravitate towards those different roles.
And you provide in the book a really nice kind of way of thinking about that, a way of getting your head around that challenge of, you know, putting that question David just asked into the fear mode of someone standing up about to give a presentation. One of the reasons people pack stories with so many stories is, well, I need to show all of my workings, otherwise I will be caught out, otherwise I'll be asked a question, otherwise, you know, I'll get in trouble. And what you do a great job of in the book is, you know, there's the story of how you got that final curated story, and you need to keep that story. That story is relevant for an audience of your analyst data peers, right, so that you can defend it and get feedback for them. But when you go to your real business audience, that is the fastest way to kill their interest and attention.
And it's something we all want to do, I think, because,
yeah,
I mean, that's, we're proud of the work that we do, and we want to show how we've done it. We want to show all the effort that it took and all the decisions that we had to make, and because that's what it comes down to. We are very proud and we want to show off what we've achieved. But it just comes down to understanding who it is that you're talking to. So you're absolutely right. If you're talking to a technical audience, they will appreciate how you got to the insights that you've got to, the models that you chose, the methods that you had to go through. Anybody outside a data team, though, is not going to appreciate that at all. And I think that's what sometimes people will struggle with is, and I do a lot of mentoring in this space, trying to get very technical people to communicate to general audiences. And it can almost be offensive. They do get offended when I tell them they're not going to care about that. Your audience is just not interested in this particular bit, the bit that they have spent so much time on. And it is really, really hard to hear. But it comes back to that. We need to understand who we're talking to. We need to understand what our audience is going to be interested in if we're going to create a communication that's going to stick.
There's a slight trap, though, there, isn't there? You wouldn't want people to hear that and to stop applying that rigor in their own work to create the insights that then...
Oh, absolutely not. So you still need to...
You need to have that switch. Yeah.
Yeah. You still need to do it, but it's just about thinking about your audience in terms of what do they want to know. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you've changed anything about how you got there. It's just what you tell them.
I think when it comes to professional skills like that, one of the questions that invariably comes up, especially for students who haven't had that business experience, is how do you practice this if you're not already in a business environment? Even if you are, it's, you know, can be hard for a junior to go out and seek opportunities for themselves. But if you're, you know, a student wanting to get into the field, what are some ways that people can actually practice the art of storytelling when they're not immersed in a business?
Yeah, I think at the end, at the very crux of it, if we go down to the level of what is data storytelling all about, it is about communication. And so you can practice by taking something really technical. And if you're a student and you're learning something technical, see if you can communicate that to your mum or your dad or somebody completely outside your technical world. Because if you can make them understand what you're studying, that's a huge skill that will translate into data storytelling. So it doesn't necessarily have to involve data and metrics, but it is about how do you distill down something to a point that somebody else who's not technical will still be able to understand it. Because then you have to think about, okay, why am I doing this? What am I hoping to achieve? What is the impact that I'm trying to create here by learning this? And it really does make you think about how do you explain that a little bit better.
It's fascinating. I've just never heard anyone give that advice to students before, and it just seems so obvious now that, like, why don't we do that more as part of data education? Like, just practice communicating this to someone who doesn't understand what you've done.
Instead, there's like a hazing ritual of explain it to people who understand it even more than you, and then they will ask you awkward questions trying to trick you out about the stuff you don't know.
That's not practicing the right skills.
It's not real life
you're not
either.
Get follow-up questions. Yeah.
No, that's not real life. That is, you know, learning to ape or kind of fake knowledge instead of develop it, right? That process of distillation towards an audience, right? It's not meaningless compression of just delete every whatever page. It's remove the stuff that is not necessary to communicate a message, but you still have to have a message. And so I keep going back to that, and maybe one way to square that in my head is that science also functions this way, right? So not only data analysis has a perception of being very bland and white lab coat kind of, I just churn out the insights and other people do stuff with it. That's actually the view that a lot of people have of science as well. But science doesn't work if that's how you do it. There isn't science without theory, right? Which is educated guesses based on prior observations. And so that's one thing that I've always really look back fondly on my science training, was the ability to develop theories and competing theories, right? Because even if you are not personally invested in a particular data story, you can still take on the persona of one or more competing theories, right? It's actually not, you don't have to deeply believe that the business should do A or B or C or nothing in order to generate a story. Or am I talking BS? Do you have to believe the story to some extent to communicate it effectively or to develop it?
Well, I think there can be, what we have to understand is when we do analysis, there could be multiple stories that come out of it and they could be competing. And so part of what I do in trying to tell at least a more unbiased story is when you do have a message, just ask yourself, well, is the opposite also true? Because that will get you thinking a little bit differently and you won't necessarily push as hard, or you will be more open to feedback and criticism because you've thought about, is the other story still relevant? Am I telling the only story that can be told? Because most of the time you're not.
I think that probably alleviates some of the worry about putting an opinion or like something concrete on the slides, because if you've thought about it from different angles, then even if you tell one of the stories, you're at least aware of all the different stories you could have told.
Yeah, and you don't want to be telling all of the stories at once, because that's also not helpful. People do like a little bit of certainty with how you communicate that information. And sometimes I think that's been what's missing in science and also what's missing in business in some cases in terms of technical communication, is there's so many caveats, there's so many little footnotes, and maybe they're not so little, maybe they're just front and center.
Take up most
because
of the page.
We are scared. Yeah. We're just a bit scared of just drawing a line in the sand sometimes and saying, this is the message.
I think it also deflects responsibility, right? If you don't say anything on your slides, just issue a bunch of caveats, then if anything goes wrong, you know, all the caveats were there for anyone to do with
though,
us.
David,
they will.
Is it not just probably that some of the people that choose these things for careers are putting those caveats to avoid responsibility for things going wrong, that they're also just as afraid or maybe even more afraid of being listened to, and the thing happens and then it works, and then they are asked to do it again? Would that be scarier for some people?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever been scared that something would work too well, but I don't think I've made enough of an impact on anything
the back of my
as
mind,
an analyst.
Yeah, of the overall resistance that we've talked about, like success at this very thing we'd be talking about would pull people further out of that dark, you know, technical cupboard, right? And again, some people really want to be there and some people actually want to get out.
And I think there is space for people who just want to be technical. When you've got large organizations and you've got big analytics data science teams, there is room for having people who are just focused on the technical and they're really good at it. And that's what their personality allows for. And that's where they thrive. And then you could have people in that same team who take on more of that data storytelling role. So more of that communications role. And if you can get a team that works well with that mix of people, that's great.
Yeah.
And how does a data storyteller tell the story of their own value in like an interview, for example, when especially job adverts are just crammed full of technical buzzwords? And as we said, as you already said, people don't necessarily hire for that skill. How do you sell it as a skill when you actually need the other person to also hire for that skill?
Yeah, some of it you do need to rely on the person who's interviewing you to actually understand the importance of that skill. Other times you can go through and a little bit about what we've already talked about and saying, well, what is the value of all the things that you're working on as a team if you can't communicate that? Because that's at the end of the day what it's all about. But some of it is actually showing people that you can do it. So it's all very well to say, yes, I'm a data storyteller. But okay, point to something that you've done where you've communicated something effectively. This is not just data storytelling. It's all words in terms of I do this, I do this, I do this. Okay, well, show me. And I think that's what's missing from a lot of people in terms of when they go for interviews. They don't necessarily have that portfolio to just back up what they're talking. And I think if you are a student or you're trying to get into this field, you don't have to necessarily have done this in a business to show that you are capable. There are so many ways that you can show that you can communicate effectively in terms of take something technical and make it relatable, make it understandable. There's so much free data metrics out there that you could have a go at showing off your skills. You, as I said before, you don't have to be visual. There are multiple different medias out there in which you can share your work or your message with the world. It's just a case of actually doing it, because a big part of this field or this practice is to actually practice. That is the only way that you are going to get better at this particular skill.
And I'm so glad you said that. I think that's just true of everything. Like, we like to think that data education is all about cramming models into people's heads, as many algorithms as possible. But yeah, there's no substitute.
Oh, we don't like to think that, David. Other
people. We don't like to think that. Other people.
But it's, I mean, that's still how the job market seems to be operating. And there's still lots of people coming out of different flavors of formal training without that portfolio of any skills. And then as a hiring manager in the past, you know, now, if you could send the book back in time, it would be really helpful, because now I know the name of the thing that I was looking for all along. And yeah, the number of candidates who could show they could do both the technical work and remotely tell a story was small. And so I had to extract it from people in other ways, which also supports your point. You know, there's multiple ways to do this. It doesn't need to be visual, but yeah, practicing. And it also strikes me that this is, I'm not going to say that one of the easiest things to evidence, because that's not quite right, but the raw materials that you need to do this practice are abundant, put it that way. Like, there are lots of potential stories in the world, there are lots of people making claims about this or that thing, and there's data to use to tell a story about that thing. So it should in some ways be easier for people to do this sometimes than, oh, how, where's the perfect open data for me to try some exotic algorithm on? Well, actually, maybe start with evidencing these skills first. You might have an easier
and
time.
And it's funny you say that, because we've all been there, right? We've all Googled and Kaggle, and I've been there when that's what I thought that I should do, right? I thought I needed to upskill my technical ability. I needed to practice my model building. And that's the first thing you go to.
The other thing then that I want to ask before we end is, you know, what is the impact of AI, the whole generative AI wave hype on all of this? And I think your answer is probably not going to be dissimilar to a lot of the answers we've heard on this series so far, but this feels like maybe a different kind of skill in terms of how it might be affected.
Yeah, it's an interesting space to watch, because I am quite excited about where it could go. I do think that data storytelling in some ways can be taken over, or at least bits of it taken over by this generative AI. I think it depends on asking the right questions, in terms of when we're not at that point yet, we just don't really understand enough about the reasons we communicate, how we're going to create that impact within a business, and a lot of that can't necessarily be done by the LLM. You are relying on something outside of that to feed into it, and we're not necessarily there yet. And so while parts of data storytelling can definitely be taken over, because it is a process, it's a step-by-step process you can follow, and any process that you can write down, you can automate. But there are just other things that will feed into it that we're just, it's not there yet. It's not saying that we're not going to be. And I do think data storytelling as a field could one day be, at least have parts of it taken over. But I think by going through that process, there will be other parts that will need to be highlighted and will need to be, have people upskill in. So I think it's going to be one of those fields, like any technical field, that's just going to keep changing as more technical advances are made.
I would maybe even go a step further and say
the more AI scales up all of the other stuff we've been talking about, from the pointless production of things that no one's going to look at anyway. Like, if that's a thing that people feel needs to happen in a business and we can automate that at low cost, let's do it so that it goes a flywheel that spins things that people are going to ignore into a black hole. Let's not waste human effort on that. And I think that the kind of skills we've talked about today and what's in your book will become more valuable, right? And yes, parts of it will and should be assisted, but that whole, you know, what are we doing here? Why are we doing it? You made the point about what you need to put into the LLM to get something out. If you're in a competitive setting, or even if you're just in a government agency competing with another government agency for the same taxpayer money, right? It's what you find outside that generic average answer from the internet, which is what a publicly trained LLM, you know, can do for you. Yeah, it can generate words, but that edge, right, the distinctive thing, the thing that gets intention, is almost by definition going to come from the outside, right? So if it's storytellers who tell it, then, you know, they're also the ones who are going to be finding that informational edge. So I would maybe look forward to a future of that business analyst type that you described, and many, many more people who know much more about the business, kind of leveling the playing field with people who say stuck in just the technical side, and say, we're fine with that. No, the real challenge is this thing, and that's where my human skill is, and even maybe AI-assisted human skill, but in the end, human skill about communication, which would be great for your book sales. Yeah.
It's an exciting show to watch.
yeah. The Data Storyteller's Handbook is out now, available wherever you buy books. I've always wanted to say that on something that sounded like a video. it's not about my book, but yeah. Very, very happy that you made this one happen. David, you're writing a book, so you've probably got a shot in the arm from tonight's conversation. And I have not, but I have long dreamed. So maybe this will help me tell a story one day.
So where can people find you online, Kat, and your book?
So my website is roguepenguin.co.nz. My book, The Data Storyteller's Handbook, is available on your local Amazon marketplace. Or I think you can request it from local bookstores. They'll have to order it, but it is available. But you can check it out either through my website or on Amazon.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being with us and taking the time, Kat.
Thank you. My pleasure.